listener.
KickPod acknowledges the traditional owners and custodians of the land in which we're recording this podcast, the Yulukut Woolen clan of the Boonwurrung, who are part of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to our elders, past and present, and extend our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Welcome to the KickPod, your D&M on the stuff that matters,
but also the stuff that doesn't. 1, 2, 3.
Hello there.
Hello.
Now, today's episode, sorry to get right into it, but I'm not sorry actually, because this one is a very, very special good episode.
Yeah.
The reason for this is because we have been wanting to record this episode for such a long time, and we wanted to find the right expert to bring on, and my goodness me, did we do that times 100. So today we are going to be speaking all about relationships and if you should stay in it or break up, which is the hardest decision in the whole world. So who have we got? We've got Megan Luscombe. So Megan is a relationship coach with over 12 years experience, and she specializes in individual and couples coaching as well as business coaching. But today we're focusing all on relationships.
I enjoyed this conversation so much. I feel like I actually got not that I'm looking to break up with Josh.
Oh,
let me be
can
clear.
Can I just say, all of those gossip pages, they just got their clicks, they got the gossip, they got the gossip.
Let me be clear. Like, so we had Megan on to, as Laws spoke, answer some of your questions that you guys sent in and different situations, because if we're going to talk about whether or not you should break up with someone, really, there's so many things that come into that. And we knew that we had to have some diverse situations so that you guys listening might be in similar situations to some of the people who sent in these things. And so we're talking to things like, I love him, but I'm not in love with him anymore. I'm still young and I'm scared I'm missing out on my 20s. My husband said he wanted 2 kids and now he's changed his mind after having the first. Anyway, things like that. And they're big, big, hard, hard conversations and situations to be in. And the way that Megan just talks about approaching some of these really difficult conversations and approaching it and really thinking about your values and working through that, I loved it so much.
It was so good.
I really did.
It is honestly one of the hardest decisions.
Truly.
Knowing to break up with someone or not is the hardest decision, I would say,
yeah,
out of all decisions that we make.
I think particularly when like they haven't done anything particularly wrong, you know?
I agree.
It's not like someone's done something absolutely awful and there's like all this merit. It's just like maybe you've just fallen out of love, or maybe, you know, you've gone in different directions in life. And it's like when you're with someone, and especially, you know, over a couple of years, they become like your best friend, bit of a soulmate, also like just a habit, right, in your life. And it's really scary to let go of. So anyway, really, really enjoyed the way that Megan approached your situations. And we hope you guys who sent in your situations get a lot out of it, but then also everyone listening. I think there's so much to be able to relate to. So enjoy.
Megan, welcome to
Thanks.
The KickPod. We are so excited to have you on.
Very excited to be here.
This has been an episode we have been wanting to do for such a long time, because we find the most common question we get in our DMs / just in our conversations we're having with our friends is, do I break up with my partner? Am I in the right relationship? Because it is just so hard to know. And also, how do I do it? How do I go about it? Because it is such a hard situation to be in. And if the people are in a long-term relationship, or even if it's a shorter term, but especially in a longer-term relationship, it's so hard because breakups are bizarre. I often think about this. Like if you have a best friend, you can break up with your friends, right? But in a breakup, it's like you go from being best friends and you might still love the person, you're just not on the same path.
Yeah.
And then you go to almost, depending on how they deal with it or you deal with it, never speaking again. Yeah. And it is so jarring.
Using that network of people potentially that you created.
Yeah, like their family and their friends.
Absolutely.
It is such a huge decision. Yeah. And so you have been a relationship coach for 10 years.
12 this year.
12 years, sorry. I apologize. Those 2 years are important. Amazing.
12 years this year.
And so we asked the community to send in some questions, or I suppose situations that they're in where they are thinking about their relationship and if it's the right one. Mm-hmm. And we would love to get your advice on them.
I'm ready to give my advice on these situations.
Okay, the first one is something that I have actually heard this so many times throughout life in general, whether it's from the community or from friends of mine. But it's the I love them, but I'm not in love with them. So they say, I'm 25 years old and have the most incredible partner that I've had for 4 years. My partner is incredible. I love him so much as a person and I love our life together. But for the past year, I feel we have lost our sexual attraction. Mm-hmm. How can I love someone so much but lose the sexual attraction and have it turn into a friendship? Is there a way back or do we break up?
This is a really common question because what we're really talking about here is the dip in dopamine and lust. And generally when people say, I love them, but I'm not in love with them, what they're saying is, I don't feel the chemistry. I don't feel the intensity that I once experienced. And you said 25, yeah? Yeah, okay. So 25, obviously, being brought up in the age demographic of social media, marketing, Hollywood romance, we really have an expectation that love is going to feel a certain way.
Yeah.
But we don't apply the same feelings of love to anybody else in our life. We know we love our parents if we have great relationships with them. We love our best friends. We love our children. But we don't question it from the same angle that we question our romantic dynamics.
So
we go, oh, I'm not in love with them anymore. No, no, actually, you love them now from a place of deepness.
Mm.
You know, when you have friendships, you have a certainty of connection. You know, it's a shared thing that grows and it builds. And you never randomly wake up one day and say, I actually don't love my best friend anymore. I'm not in love with them anymore. No, you are. You feel it. It's a knowingness. What happens is we get to, most people can dip out of the honeymoon phase, probably depending on how close proximity they are. I'm going to go based on what you've said there. It sounds like they would have had a chunk of COVID together, which really caused couples to really face themselves and have a bit of a mirror towards them because they were in close proximity. So we really got to know our partners quite intimately if we didn't already. And lust can't live in those areas. Desire cannot be created if we are around somebody all the time. Mm. And hey, if we're going to be with someone long term, chances are we're going to be around them a lot. And our partners aren't really sexy taking out the trash, helping us take care of our kids, you know, when they're being annoying, you know, things like that, things that we as humans do. So when that lust starts to dissipate, we have to create desire and spontaneity. And that's where sexual attraction lives. And we can't be sexually attracted to someone we see all the absolute time because we know too much about them. There's no secrecy. And by secrecy, I mean, you know, when you first start dating somebody and you don't know that much about them. So you can create a bit of a thing in your head.
Yeah.
You know, you can create an expectation. When you get to know all of that, illusion is gone. So now we have to create that. We have to create that spontaneity, which is lust. And that's where sexual chemistry lives. So a lot of the time, couples will get to a place of genuine love where they have a real connection. The fact that this person described their partner as incredible.
Yeah.
We know there's a great relationship there.
Yeah.
We know there's a solid foundation of love. But what you're doing now is saying, if I'm in a relationship with this person, I need to be able to experience the feelings of lust continuously because that's what makes me feel that I should be with this person. But long term, that's actually not achievable.
Mm.
Lust will come and go throughout the relationship based on how you're feeling, your hormones.
Yeah.
Like it's a very, I've always said, if I could find a way to bottle lust and sell it like a little droplet you put on your wrist so you could like have it, I would be a bajillionaire because it's what everybody wants. They want the consistency of lust, but from a chemistry standpoint, it's not anything that can last. So what I would say to this person is sit down and work out what you can co-create together from a place of space, intimacy, and from sexual attraction, because sexual attraction lives in desire. And chances are you were very, very attracted to this person initially, which is the feelings that you're talking about. And you now need to consciously co-create those moments. They're not going to come just by chance, which is how they start in the relationship. We just have this anticipation already. Now, the longer you are with somebody, you need to co-create these moments. And for some people, that might sound boring because you have to actually work at it. But unfortunately, and fortunately, that's just long-term love.
Mm.
It's in the co-creation.
It's really nice to hear the way that you kind of spoke about it like that. I think particularly when you relate it to the love that you have for your family and everything like that. I think that's such a good way to think about it because I've absolutely fallen in this kind of headspace before. I mean, I've been with my partner since I was 18 years old, so 12 years now. To like do the maths in my head. And it's we've definitely gone through stages where I've been like, well, I love him. He's my soulmate. He's my best friend. But like, I don't feel that same like spark that I once did. And then we had a kid and then like went through it again. So I think it's like, it's really refreshing to hear. I suppose that it's important we don't kind of compare how we feel towards them as we might have felt towards them, you know, maybe when I was 13 years old looking at him and like wanting to be with him one day, or to what we see in movies.
Love should be calm.
Yeah.
It's a calm consistency. What people are looking for is thrill and adrenaline. And I get that. I really do, because it's such a fun experience. But for the longevity of a relationship, we need certainty and we need predictability, because that's why we bond with someone. And the longer term you are together, the more you have that genuine calmness. What happens is when we don't have that sort of adrenaline, we can dip into doubt.
Yeah.
And doubt doesn't mean don't. Doubt means we need to actually consciously work now. Something needs to happen. Obviously, unless the relationship isn't working for you, we've got value misalignment and things like that. But based on that question, it sounds like we do have a really great relationship. We just now need to step into the co-creation of love, as opposed to just hoping it's going to be there.
So as you kind of said then, if there was like a bit of misalignment, what if there was, say, someone was in this position, but they were feeling like they did kind of want to make some sort of switches to find that spontaneity again, to be able to feel that spark. Obviously not expecting it to be the level or as regular as it once was when they first started dating, but to just bring it back every now and again, what would you advise? Like, what are ways that you can kind of spice it up a bit?
Yeah, well, look, most people automatically, when it comes to these areas, they always go to sex.
Yeah.
Like, how do we spice it up? Do I need to start wearing lingerie? Should I start doing this? And they're the really superficial areas of intimacy because anybody can do them.
Yeah.
We can all go buy lingerie. But what we need is an emotional intimacy. And the emotional intimacy is being vulnerable with that conversation and saying, hey, I really want us to desire having this again. How do you feel about that? How do I feel about that? What does that look like? I mean, we've been together for 4 years in that situation. Maybe what I liked at the start, I no longer do. You know, maybe my intimacy is something I've never considered. And most of the time when I ask people, what is intimacy and what does it mean to you? Most people don't know because they've been taught, oh, that's sex, right? Like, but no, it's not. It's actually a cultivation of so many things. So I would say in a situation where you have maybe a roadblock of how do we get this spark back, I would first say work out what the spark actually means to you and then what it feels like so you can properly communicate that to your partner, then get their actual feelings and what they think back, and then ask yourself, what were we doing initially that created that feeling? Because most of the time it isn't actually the act of sex, it's the surrounding circumstances that created the let's have sex feeling. So it's about investigating those type of scenarios first before you just assume it's going to be sex.
Oh, thank you. I think that will help so many people because I think you're right. It's the movies. It makes us think that lust should be
external pressure,
like there all the time, and it's not possible, especially like if you've been with your partner for... Actually, I wanted to ask you, what is the... Because I think people said if you survive 7 years, it's like likely that you'll... What's the period where the lust scientifically will have... Obviously, COVID expedited it, as you said. But outside of COVID, what is the period of time where it's the lust is gone?
It's really dependent on a person's insecurity levels.
Really?
Yeah. If you can become securely attached to somebody, we no longer need to feel a fight or flight. We feel calm and connected, and we feel our needs are being met. And generally when our needs aren't being met is when we start chasing people more. And that can create anticipation. It can create feelings of, oh, I need to try harder. And lust lives in those areas, by the way. And lust lives in the areas of trying more. So for some people, lust can last a really long time. It can last, but it's not actually... It's not really an exciting lust, though. It's I'm scared. You know, I'm scared about this, and it's making me feel feelings of insecurity. Lust, I would say, for couples who are living together, I would say probably 2 to 3 years. Generally, it'll start petering out. But for some people, they experience lust for like 3 months. Like, it's not a guarantee. Some people don't even experience it, by the way. Some people actually like to bypass it and just go straight to like a really solidifying love. Like, some people are like, you know what? I don't want this giddiness. I want this. I want an assurance of calm and stability. And I often find that's people who are in maybe 38 plus age bracket. They're like, you know what? I want to skip that stuff. Yeah. I don't need to do that again. You know, I want this. I want an intimacy that's genuine and connecting now. But the longer you live with someone is in close proximity, the I will say more often than not, lust will dissipate quicker. Mm. However, if you're not living together, it does create space more for anticipation and desire. Mm. But also if you're like in a situation where you're FIFO, you've got fly in, fly out, 3 weeks off, 1 week where we're together and things like that, it can keep lust a little bit more alive. But what I would say is try not to focus on lust. Don't get caught up on it. I mean, it's a fun thing, but it means nothing to the quality of a relationship at all.
That is very good advice. Okay, and now staying in the theme of relationships in our 20s, because I think they are very different to relationships in other age groups. Okay, I'm young and scared I'm missing out. I'm 22 and I have been with my partner for almost 2 years and I absolutely adore him. I truly believe he is my soulmate. I want to raise children with him and I love him dearly. However, recently we have been talking about engagements. This is something I've always wanted, but the more we talk about it, the more I realize that I may be missing out on things. Mm-hmm. I have told my partner that we need to slow things down and I don't want to get engaged just yet. The thought of such a solid commitment has really got me thinking about how I want to spend my 20s. I've always been in relationships. I haven't traveled much and I feel like there are some things that I still want to do that I'm not sure if I can do whilst in a relationship. I feel like this is such a big one for almost everyone in
absolutely
their 20s.
Absolutely. And what you're really starting to talk about there is somebody becoming more aware of themselves. Like, they're having some personal growth and they're, you know, starting to realize that maybe the things that I want to do aren't in alignment with this relationship. It doesn't necessarily mean the relationship's bad, it just means we're starting to figure out ourselves more. But can couples who have been together from 16 have successful, growing, thriving relationships? Yeah, of course they can. I see it all the time. But you have to be with somebody who is able to transition through the ebbs and flows of this age and being able to have really tough conversations of, hey, we've been together for 2 years. I really love our relationship, but I'm realizing that I have places that I want to grow. So what does our relationship look like if we do that? I mean, obviously it sounds like they're in a monogamous setup. Maybe that needs to change. Maybe we need to transition our relationship into a place of openness while I discover myself and see if that's something we can talk about. And I think that's the thing. Most people don't have conversations from a place of where could we transition this relationship to as we grow. It's just we're done. Like, it's this black and white mentality. And I think that's that, you know, compulsory monogamy mindset where we can only be one or the other. And relationships should be fluid. We are fluid beings. We learn, we change, we evolve, and our relationships should be allowed to do that too. But I think a lot of individuals, especially in this really, you know, this is such a powerful and empowering like age of life, I reckon, from 18 to like 24, 25, you're really learning about yourself and what you like, what you don't like. And, you know, it can be really confusing. And I think this is the time where this person can actually have a conversation of, what do I want? What do we want? Is there a way we can transition this relationship to a place of safety where we're still connected, but we are also allowing each other opportunities of other things? And that doesn't need to threaten the relationship. It's just being open about having a conversation like that.
Oh, that is good advice. Yeah. I think it's something that for anyone in this situation right now, and I mean, if I'm thinking back for myself too, and just generally, the FOMO is, and maybe beyond our 20s, FOMO always exists.
Yeah, it does.
How do we know the difference between looking at, so for this person or anyone that's thinking, because I do think sometimes people might think they need to travel or they need to explore because everyone else has done it and people have said, this is what your 20s are for, right? How do you know what you want versus just comparing to what other people are doing, or like, how do you know if this is rooted in comparison or if it's actually what you want?
Yeah. Grass is greener syndrome is real.
Yes. How do we know it's not grass is greener and it's actually where we should be going and that we are growing and challenging ourselves?
Yeah. You would know it's something you want if it does not involve anybody else. if you weren't thinking about what your friends were doing, if you weren't considering what your other friends thought of you. Mm. I mean, most of the time, all of these thoughts do come from comparison. Social media has really created this, you know, a really negative spiral for people where they feel they have to be on a similar level than somebody else. And it's unrealistic. And what I would say to people in these type of situations is, if you removed all social media and you were sitting in a room by yourself and you were never going to know anybody again, what would you decide? Like, what would you pick?
That's very powerful.
Like, and that's
the... Be honest with yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Because most of the time, especially in such a like formative age, I mean, social media is like pretty, you know, detailed in that age bracket. There is this comparinitis, this like grass is greener, I should be doing what my friends are doing, and why am I not wearing this, or why am I not doing that, and not enough, not enough, not enough. And I think if you sit down and remove all of that and ask yourself, if I didn't have Instagram, if I didn't have TikTok, you know, if I wasn't, you know, posting my life or following other people who are posting their life, what decision would I make? Because most of the time, people are avoiding listening to themselves and they're listening to an echo chamber of people who are curating their life for audiences to see. And this is an opportunity to get to know yourself and be brave. And I mean, at 22, I was married and getting ready to get divorced, you know, and that was all about making choices and being brave and listening to what I wanted. And I think this is just a time for this person to ask, what do I want, and bring that conversation into the relationship, and to see if the relationship can transition. And if it can't, that's okay. That's okay. There's no right or wrong there, but just going a bit deeper.
I think it's so important. I remember back to when my partner, my now partner, and I first started dating. We were only a couple of years in before we both, he went traveling around the world and I moved to the States. So I was gone for about 10 months and there was probably a solid period of about 5 months where we didn't see each other at all.
Yeah.
And then the other months it was kind of just like one weekend here and there if he happened to be kind of passing through. And I remember in that moment, so many people told me, you're 20 years old, you're like living alone, you need to be single right now. Like, you need to be like having fun, going out, meeting all these different people. To the point where I genuinely was like, do I?
Yeah, of course.
Is that what I need to be doing right now? Because I as well, like the person we were talking about before, had always kind of been a relationship person.
Yeah.
I just found a lot of comfort in that and I loved that. And so I started to think, do I need to be a dating person? Do I need to like mix it up? So, and I think particularly because a lot of people who knew who I was with was like, you know, you've had your sights on him like your entire life. Like that's almost like they thought I was like blindsided by this like childhood crush that I had. But it was really interesting because we had really open conversations even before that trip about like, what do we want to do in this period? Because I think we were both very aware that we wanted to be with each other forever. Like we were pretty set that we were each other's soulmates, but we also were about to go on this like really exciting journey for ourselves. So we did discuss like, do we just like, you know, not be, I don't know, what's the word for it?
Monogamous
in this period. And then we can just come back and it'll be, you know, we'll go back to normal and everything like that. We decided we wouldn't just because it wasn't what either of us wanted, but I had to really, truly dig deep and be like, what do I actually want?
Yeah.
Because the outside world was telling me, no, go and explore, go have fun or whatever. And I was like, but why is it not fun to be?
But that's exactly right. Together? It's really an interesting sort of thought to have to say to people, your 20s are for this.
Yeah.
Says who?
Yeah.
Like, says who? Like, a lot of the time when people will say things like that, I always tell my clients to turn the question around and ask, is that what you wanted to do? Because they're just projecting. I mean, I think it's fantastic to hear stories of people saying, I've been with them since I was 16.
Yeah.
Like, how great. But also it's great for somebody to say, I've been married 3 times.
Yeah.
Like, there's no better or worse. There's just choosing what you choose and having conviction in the choice. And relationships should grow as they go. And that means it's about 3 years into the relationship, having tough conversations. And if we need to change our relationship dynamic for 6 months as we navigate, we can fluidly go in and out of this. It's I think it's a societal sort of expectation that a relationship has to go one way. And if it doesn't, it must mean it's a failure. And also, I don't think people are comfortable having to tell their friends that their relationship structure may have changed. So there's a lot of, it's always outside noise. So It's just listening to that inner self. And hey, look, you've just said it. You both had the conversation, you dug deep, had the conversation, and you were able to transition and grow as you went. And that's the most important part. Yeah. Have the conversation, allow for the conversation to take place. Don't make an assumption and go for it.
Love it. Do you know what I love in that? Don't make an assumption. I think that's a thing. Yeah. It's so hard to, and this is something that Steph and I are working through a lot at the moment, is making assumptions.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are working through that because we don't, until we face it, we do not realize that assumptions literally rule our lives.
Yes.
Our lives. And I think in this situation, I think if anyone's in this situation, I think if I was in it, I would make an assumption. If I was in a monogamous relationship, my partner is a monogamous person. Mm-hmm. They aren't open to anything else.
Right.
That is making an assumption that they can't have that conversation. And you never, ever, ever know when you have a conversation what someone's going to say.
That's right.
But you're making an assumption based on your views of them and how you think of how they'll respond. And I think that can be something that in a situation like this can be a blocker. And that's why often we're like, well, we just have to break up. But you're not even giving that opportunity for the relationship to transition.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really important to acknowledge.
Absolutely. And I think we should all be dating people who are evolving. Because when you assume what they're thinking, what you're saying is, I know them better than they know them. I know what they're going to do. But you may have a baseline of behavior of what you assume they're going to do. But people surprise us. And that's the best thing about a long-term relationship. Somebody surprising you, you know, so try and have the conversation. It could be a really exciting one.
One, two, three, four. We have another situation and it's quite different to the first two. So this one, we have one kid and he changed his mind about wanting more. I'm 33 and he's 40 and we've been together for 4.5 years. Initially, he wanted to have 2 kids, but now we have a 9-month-old and he says he doesn't want more kids. He also used to say maybe one day to marriage, and now he says he doesn't believe in marriage either. Now we fight and he admits he likes to be selfish and wants time to do his hobbies or renovations and thinks having another child would take too much time from him. Having a family and marriage are two of the most important things to me.
Yeah, it's hard, hey?
That sounds really tough.
Yeah. And this is what we talk about when we say value misalignments.
Mm.
Because the thing is, we need to allow people to change their minds. And sometimes when they do change their minds, it fundamentally shifts our life. And I see situations like this all of the time. And it's because when we start a relationship, we have our best intentions. And we can only say how we feel at that time. Yeah, I want to have 2 kids. I want to get married. And then life goes on and we change as people and we realize, actually, no, I don't want to get married anymore. I only want 1 child. And the other person's on the other side of that receiving it like, that's not the expectation I had of us because this is the life that I created in my mind based on what we were going to have. And it's heartbreaking and it's sad. And it doesn't mean that there's no love in the relationship. It means there's love, but it's not an aligned love anymore. We've got to an impasse. Either I'm going to stay with you and potentially resent you because I didn't get the life that I wanted, or I'm going to leave you and we're going to co-parent and I'm going to find somebody who wants to have another child or maybe has another child and I get the 2-child experience. It's working out, is this a value of yours or was it an idealistic idea? And that's what's pivotal to find out, because a lot of people will go, I want 2 children, for example. Like I say, so I've got a toddler and my wife and I, we're going to have 2 kids. 2 kids is going to be it. And then I got pregnant after 4.5 years of trying with IVF and we blew a lot of cash on it. And after having our son, I went, I can't do this again. I emotionally and physically, I cannot do this again. And I said, how do you feel about that? And she said, thank fuck, because I can't do it again either. And I said, I know we said we wanted to.
Mm.
And do you want to have 2? Because if you do, like, I get it. Like, I'm changing what we had talked about. And she said, no, I'm changing it as well. And we both sat down and realized that it wasn't a value that we wanted to have 2 children. It was a vision we had thought of based on when you think of a family, you go, I'm going to have 2 kids.
Mm. Like that's society. That's like, if you look at what a family looks like in your head and what you see from the societal pressure, I don't know, it's 2 kids.
2 kids and a pet.
Yes.
Right, we have two kids and a pet.
And the way it's like, oh, well, why would you only have one kid?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, well, right? Because I want to.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
I think that's so important to talk about because I think there is this ideal, an idealistic family, I believe, pushed onto us is two children.
Yes, absolutely. So what I would say in a situation like this, it's working out, is the two children like a mandatory value of yours? Like that is something that is going to be pivotal for your life experience. Like if you pass away, if you were laying in your deathbed, are you going to go, I didn't get the life experience I wanted because I wanted two children? Or is it, this is an idea I put on myself based on who I was surrounding myself with, and maybe actually I don't want that. And like I said, there's no right or wrong here.
Yeah.
It's just choosing your choice from a place of self-understanding, not from outside expectation. Like, you know, I right now have one child, only going to have one child. And, you know, sometimes my family would be like, why aren't you going to give them a sibling? It's not a present.
Yeah.
I don't just go in and press a button and like get this other child, you know, and I think that's because there's a assumption that if you have one, you should have another. And for some people, they want to. And that's fantastic. I love that for them. Like before I had a child, I was like, two's it. I'm doing it. And now I'm like, not doing it. and that's fine for us. And I think in situations, it's all about checking in with yourself, having a real conversation with your partner about the values. Are we misaligned or are we clashing on what our expectations were of this relationship? And I would say in situations like this, it's probably best to work with somebody to get to the bottom of that conversation because generally a third party can ask a lot better questions than what you would of your partner and what you would of yourself.
Oh, it's so good. And it got me thinking when you were saying to think of like your values instead of your idea of what you think you might want. You know, it's also because you could almost flip it and it could almost be the start of someone's relationship or maybe they're a couple of years in, but they are already talking about like the potential of like having kids and stuff like that. And you're in love with this person and you know you love everything about them and you can see your future with them, but then suddenly they say, oh, no, I actually don't want kids.
Yeah.
And you find that out early and then you start to question, well, oh, shit, I've always wanted kids, so do I not be with this person anymore? Or do I? So is it the same kind of thing?
Absolutely.
That they've just got to figure out if, okay, have I always thought I wanted kids just because of the idea of having kids and like what's more important to me in staying in this relationship and then just seeing where life takes us?
Absolutely. I think the problem that I see most of the time in long-term relationships is nobody's having conversations from a value base. They're having conversations from a hope base. This is what I assume my future to be. No one's actually sitting down with their partner and saying, when it comes to these like key areas of life, like having a family, travel, money, you know, certain areas, where do you stand? Where do you sit? Like, and they just have these assumptions of these idealistic Hollywood, like, oh, we're going to get together and it's going to be great. We're going to have a family, kids, and this is my expectation. And then they get there and they're like, wait a minute, I'm infertile. Wait a minute, like it's taking us a long time and it's causing our relationship to break down. Like these are realities of long-term love and relationships. And I think if more people actually sat down and had conversations prior, like let's really talk about the real stuff. So when the real stuff comes, we've got a plan. We have some framework to come with. So, you know, these conversations of they no longer want, we should have been talking about that when we were pregnant with our first. Hey, where are you at? How are you feeling about us having another one? When that one arrived, hey, let's check in again. Like they're always, every 6 months, you should be having some really serious check-ins with your partner. And I think people often leave it to the last minute. And then we're in situations, unfortunately, like this, where this could potentially really hurt.
Especially the one day answer, like it's like that. It's that hope. If your partner's
they'll
like, if you don't want to get, because in this situation, it's interesting. When I first heard this, I was like, I immediately judged the guy in this situation because I was like selfish, like I mean selfish behavior. But it's actually then I was like, actually no, I need to question myself and why I came to that conclusion because it's not selfish behavior. It's just what he wants. And that's
exactly
not aligned. And I think though what's really important in this, in because he always used to say maybe one day.
That's right.
That's dangerous, isn't it?
Exactly.
Because that's like giving this hope.
We never latch onto one day comments.
Yeah.
We always make people give factual yeses or nos, especially when it comes to values. Oh, I'll think about it. No, no. You will tell me. Like there's no like no, this is the one day is too wishy washy. Especially when it comes to areas like this. We can't hang our hope there because then you'll get into situations where you've been waiting for 6 years and then they change their mind. And I don't want that for anybody. certainty is where we want. And I can understand some people might go, I don't know right now. Well, I'd like you to think on it for the next few weeks so we can have a serious conversation about it. Like, you can have a serious thought about something over a few weeks and come up with a conclusion. We don't need to expect people to have their minds made up immediately on the spot. We always want to hold space for people to consider. But when it comes to things like this, it's a relationship's responsibility to provide clarity, not confusion. So if your partner can't provide you clarity, then that's something you need to be considering. How come they aren't able to give me an answer based on something that they'd once told me? What's happening now? Like, and this is where I go, you're moving into a territory that you probably won't be able to navigate by yourself, because your emotions, like the emotions you can read from that question, are already high.
I felt like I got tingles when I was like, I felt emotional, like hearing that, because I was like, fuck, that is just so hard. Yeah. And I think the other thing too is having a family. I think too, sometimes we think, like, I hear conversations of friends where one person might want to have kids and one doesn't.
Yeah.
And they say, and I mean, actually, do you know what, where I see this the most in movies? And then the movie characters say, I know, but you're the most important person to me. So I'm going to stay with you and put all my, I'm just not going to worry about that. And that also could be in a point of lust where they're not actually yet in this like comfortable relationship. Yeah. But if you push what you want down and that shit down, like, it's going to come back
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely. Yeah, always does.
So you have to decide. Maybe for some people it is. Yeah. No, for me, being with in a really stable relationship, that's what I want. Mm-hmm. But then I suppose it's like, but I really, how do you even? But it's, do you know what? I have had a conversation with friends that it's mainly in movies that it's that thing, no, that you're choosing you. And I think it's that kind of feeling that if we don't, if someone says, oh, I don't know if I'm going to have kids, and you're like, okay, well, I love you, but we're not aligned anymore.
And that's exactly right.
You feel bad that like to leave that you're being selfish because that's what
But it's
you
not
want.
Selfish. That's the thing. It's not selfish.
Why do we feel with breakups and things that it's you're a bad person for doing it? Where does that come from?
It's again, it's Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's the ideal of what a heroic act for, you know, just putting aside the things that you wanted for the ultimate love. Love doesn't make you do that stuff. Like, love doesn't make you compromise in that way. Of course, we make compromises of picking up our kids when I was going to go and get a massage and like things like that. But a value compromise, love does not make you value compromise ever. Like, ever. If you are dating somebody where you have to go back on your values, get the fuck out. That is not a relationship you want to be in. So it's always about understanding on a value level, I want two children or I expected that I would. So got to get in those values. You got to know your values inherently. So then you can match them up with somebody, but also check in with your values every, you know, six months. The world changes dramatically and our values change along with it. So it's always making sure, like, is my partner and my partner and I aligned? Like, are we still on the same page? And my wife and I every year, January the 1st, do we still want to be in this relationship? Are we still on the same page? Do we still want the same things? And if we don't, then you break up from a place of conscious love. It's not from a place of get fucked. It's from a place of fuck, this has been amazing, but you know what, we're different and that's okay. You know, like, I mean, we've been together for 12 years, so it's been pretty successful so far. I'm married before, but you know, I think couples aren't having these conversations and they need to be.
As you speak about values and value alignment, I would love to explore that, because I think in terms of having kids or not is a very clear huge. For people in terms of you want them or you don't, you want to get married or you don't. Outside of that, I feel, or this is me speaking for myself, it becomes very grey in terms of selfishness and values. So the example you use of massage, obviously that's like that's something that, like, you have relationships are give and take, right? You can't have everything you want all of the time. What else for anyone, because the kid and marriage situation is so obvious, or scenario, what are the other areas of values that might not be aligned where people might be pushing them down because they're like, oh no, that's just like, that's not, that's just a small thing. Like, I can't end my relationship over this, but it's actually a value that they shouldn't be squishing down.
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell you them straight away when it comes to homophobia and racism. Well, my partner's a little bit racist. That's all right though. Even though, you know, I tell everybody I'm an ally. What? Why are you compromising on such huge things? Like, they're the ones, they're the little ones that seep on through. Or you're out with your friends and one of their partners makes a really derogatory comment and you see their partner be like, stop saying that, Scott. Like, why are you with Scott still? That's a clear value misalignment. And these are the little things that they start seeping in, like maybe when it comes to politics, when it comes to what's going on in the world, you start to see you and I are on the same page here. You think that you agree with what just happened there and I don't. And fundamentally, on a value level, that's a red flag for me. Like if I was sitting down watching a show and my wife started being racist, there is no let me change your mind. It is get the fuck out. Like, no, it's not my job to make you a better person. Like, and this is what I find, a lot of women do this in particular, and I don't like to stereotype, but I work with a lot of straight couples and I also work with the queer community, but a lot of women will placate their male partner's behaviours as, oh, it's just him. It's just him. He's been like that. He doesn't really mean it.
Oh, that.
Babes, he does. He does. Stop excusing his shit behaviour. He means it when he says it and you're embarrassed that he says it. So your values are shifting. You should never have to justify your partner's behaviour. If you ever, ever have to say, oh, he just does that. He didn't mean it. Oh, you know, I'm really sorry about what Scott said. What? I don't ever have to apologise on behalf of my wife. I'm proud of everything that comes out of her mouth and how she behaves with people. Like, I'm proud of her. Like, I don't, there's no question in my mind of going, oh, God, what does she think on that issue? But, you know, and I think, you know, here's a really great example, Gogglebox, right, where you see people respond to certain things, right, and you see the families have these different opinions. And that's going to happen in families, right, because we're all different people.
Yeah.
But partnerships, that's when you start to go, wait a minute, we're not what? Like, what? Why are you saying that? And that's where we've got to check in. All of those moments, because sometimes people are just spewing off what they've heard from their parents. They haven't really checked in with their value system. They're just repeating what they've heard. So it's always an opportunity to go, hey, when you said that, do you believe that? And then either they'll go, oh, I just, isn't that what people say? Or, oh, it's just a joke that, you know, we've always said. Let's investigate that.
Yeah.
Let's dig a little deeper. And then you have the connector again. You're back connected. You're back aligned because it was a miscommunication or whatever. It was a slip of the tongue and someone's just being stupid. And then we get back on the same page and we rectify the moment or we expose the misalignment.
Yeah.
So you're either going to connect on it, same page, or you're going to expose it. And the exposure is where you get to make a decision and hold yourself accountable to the decision. Which is confronting.
That is so helpful. No, that is confronting, but I think it's really helpful because I think too, and I speak to so many of my friends about this. With women, I think we often get in a situation where we fix them. Like we want to fix
them.
Well,
we've been told to parent our partners.
That's right.
Yeah. We're the caregivers of the world.
But that's not values alignment,
no,
is it?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I mean, I can now speak from experience. You know, I was married to a man. And now I'm married to a woman. And there is a clear, clear difference in expectation. How society talked to me when I was married to a man was from a caregiver.
Yeah.
How people talk to me now is from a place of equal. Yeah. But yes, the parenting our male partners needs to stop.
Yeah.
That's not a value. It's not a value taking. People will go, oh, but I like taking care of people. Uh-huh. That's an action.
Yeah.
We don't need to mother
our
partners. Big difference.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. We have some quick questions we would love to finish on. This one I feel like is quite common. Am I a bad person for thinking about my ex while I'm in a new relationship?
No.
So quick.
No. Of course you're not. You're human.
Yeah.
We always compare back to our past.
Yeah.
You are always going to think of experiences that you've gone through. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about in those moments? Ask yourself. That's where you need to start digging. What am I thinking about when it comes to my ex? Am I thinking good things? Am I thinking bad things? Am I thinking about good qualities? It's dig deeper. It's never the top level. The automatic assumption is I'm thinking about my ex, it's bad.
Yeah.
Oh my God, no.
Well, because I think again in movies and stuff like that, when you think like that, it's like they end up getting back at that person.
Yeah.
You know, that's always the storyline.
So no, true. It's then going, what's bringing on that thought?
Yeah.
And then taking it from there.
Yeah.
It's not always a bad thing.
That's nice. Okay, what about this one? So how do you stop having feelings for someone who never really loved you in the first place?
That's good.
How do you stop having feelings? Well, it's working out what those feelings are.
Like why?
Yeah. Okay. Like are we experiencing lust? And that can find someone else. It'll change pretty quickly. Get another pet project. You'll be pretty happy there. But it's understanding feelings for somebody are only genuine feelings when we have reciprocal moments. What you're talking about is one-sided, so it's a creation. You've created, curated something. What are you curating? What are you latching to the curation? And how can we bring that to somebody in reality? Because clearly this is a one-sided, you know, experience. How can we help you find that in someone?
Yeah.
So you can direct all of those great feelings that you have into somebody who can reciprocate it to you.
Yeah, it's almost like what you said before, when someone is so insecure and isn't feeling that security, that that lust is almost more there, but it's not necessarily healthy.
Yeah.
So good. Okay, last question. I can't stand my partner's family. How can I cope with that, or do we have to break up?
Yeah, look, this again comes down to what value you want from the duration of your relationship. Is it important to you to be able to co-create an experience with their family? Do you want to be hanging out with their family? Is that something that you wanted? Are you putting pressure on your partner hanging out with your family? You know, it's now talking about what your expectations are versus the reality of the relationship. Is there actually a problem with the in-laws, or is there something being curated based on what you can't control? Do you want your partner to hang around with your family? And if so, how can you have that expectation if you aren't doing the same thing? So these are, that question is never black and white.
Yeah.
It's got so much nuance in it. And I, that's what one thing I want anybody listening to this.
Yeah.
Don't do black and white questions or make decisions based on yes or no's, because things are so nuanced, and allow the nuance. That's where the juicy stuff is.
Okay, I have one quick question to finish on.
Go.
Is there a right or wrong way to break up with someone? Like texting, calling, saying it in person? Like,
I only think there is a wrong way of breaking up with someone if you do it disrespectfully.
Okay, yeah.
That's all. Like, so if you're texting abuse, I think that's disrespectful.
Yeah.
But I think based on whatever you want, your choice, we're all individuals, we have autonomy, do it how you want to, but do it in a way that you are happy with it and you don't feel like you weren't your best self when you chose to do it.
Oh, that's great advice.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. This was great.
I think we're going to have you back.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Oh, I'd
love
feel to
like
come
there's
back.
So much.
Because there's so many other, like, obviously, so many other situations, and we couldn't get through more today, but we're just going
to. I would love to come back. Yeah. I love talking about this stuff. Like, I love it. I love my job. Like,
that's great.
I fucking froth it so much. I just love talking about relationships. I think they're so intricate and amazing. So, absolutely, I'd love to come back.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening, everyone. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you would like to get involved in the Kick Pod, you can. We have got a Kick Pod Instagram where you can send us a DM about your thoughts on the podcast, some questions, some stories that happened to you. Honestly, whatever you want to send in, we would love to see and read it and hear it and chat to you. And that is at Kick Pod on Insta.
We would also appreciate your following if you would like to support the podcast.
Too.
Come
yeah.
and follow that account. That is where we'll be sharing a lot of this kind of content. So we hope you guys enjoy that. If you want to learn more about Kick, the Kick app, we have a website, kickapp.com, or you can head to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store and download our app. We have a 7-day free trial if you'd like to check out the app. And we're also on Instagram at laura.henshaw and at Steph Claire Smith. And you can find us over on TikTok as well at Kick. But we'll be back in your ears very soon.
Bye.